Good morning, welcome back to Nachiyami. Today we're going to be focusing on the 19th perek, Perek Yotes in Sefer Yeshayahu. This is a very fascinating perek. It is a longer perek of 25 psukim compared to what we've been doing up till now. And it's really divided into two sections. The first is a section which deals with the destruction, the prophecy of destruction, Masah, to Egypt. Now we're turning to the south of Israel. And the last section is four things that will happen on that day of destruction when it relates to Egypt and Yehuda. So let's focus on this parak quickly over here. Again, Yeshayahu is turning international right now. He has focused on Babylon for two parakim, Moab for two parakim. He has focused on Damascus for a parak, where this in-between one which seemed like Assyria or the future of Gog or Magog. And finally, now we're turning to Egypt in the south. We know that the relations with Egypt have been complex. Egypt has always been, to a certain degree, an enemy of Israel. There's been good trade relations at certain points in time, but certainly as we're entering into the end of this realm, it gets murky, because as we know, Egypt is equally as vulnerable as Israel to the Assyrians and later the Babylonians. So there are going to be coalitions which are formed and broken through this period. We know that ultimately, at the end of beyond Yeshayahu's days, when it's going to come to the times of Yoshiyahu the Melech, Yoshiyahu is not going, he has good relations with Egypt, but does not allow them to cross his land and is killed by the Egyptians. So there's those complexities we're going to see with the Egyptians in terms of national history. But now Yeshayahu is telling them their destruction. So again, it's framed in the word Masa, which is a heavy burden or prophecy which is given to them. So here's the first section. The first section runs from Pasuk Aleph all the way through Pasuk Tes Vav. And this is a basic summary. Hashem is going to send his retribution to Egypt very fast. Like the imagery given is Hashem flying or riding on a fast cloud of Kal Uvah Mitzrayim. The reason why the water imagery is important over here, we're going to see a lot of water imagery, is Egypt is a land which is dependent on its river, and so therefore everything is in terms of water. A land which doesn't get rain like Egypt, rather it depends on its natural resources like its river for irrigation, is made of mud houses, as the Malvin points out. So it is not prepared for torrential downpours, which is why destruction is seen metaphorically as this rain storm coming in. So at the time that Hashem comes in, Hashem will create civil war. And Egypt will be fighting among themselves. Hashem will remove good counsel, so that means to say the people will not have the right place to look, and they'll turn to empty solutions like sorcerers, to Yidonim, to people who pull up the dead, who are not going to help them with the truth. And Hashem will make them pay to a harsh master, an Adon who will come from Adonim Koshim, to harsh masters. This is referring to Assyria, who will come and destroy Egypt. And at this point in time, the sea will change its course, the river will dry up, all the reserves of water will run out, the plants in the riverbank will dry, the fishermen will be mourning because there'll be no way for them to fish. Even the net weavers won't be able to weave nets because there won't be a market to sell nets because there's no fish, right? So all the businesses will be affected. And the advisors of Pharaoh will say to her, who had proclaimed themselves so righteous and so clever and so insightful, Hashem questions him and says, well, how did Egypt get to this destruction? And Hashem explains, because I tricked you. I allowed you to be foolish and to think that you should fight against Assyria. I tricked you to think that you should stand up and you're powerful enough, and now you're all lost. And finally, this section closes with Egypt sort of blindly grappling around without knowing where to go. Graphic description here, like of a drunkard, you know, struggling through their own throw up, meaning to say, like, Egypt has no way to know that they don't know where they are, they don't know what they're doing, they don't know how devastating a position they're in, and there will be nothing that they'll succeed in, whether it be Rosh Vizanov, Kippah Vagmon. It doesn't make a difference if it's going to be the greatest, the biggest important, most important moves, or the most inconsequential moves. Egypt will fail at all of these. This is the description of the destruction and downfall of Egypt at the hands of Assyria. A few things to notice in this section before we move into the next section, and that is, it's interesting that HaKadosh Baruch Hu talks about this civil war in Egypt which ensues. It is fascinating because this actually does happen. We're going to have a historic mirror back in the times when Egypt is being destroyed, when Israel's leaving it, at the times of Yetzias Mitzrayim, in the times of the Torah. The reason why this is interesting is because at the Makas Bechoras, we notice that there actually is civil unrest. And that means to say that if you were a Bechor, as an example, if you were a firstborn Egyptian, you would be feeling very, very nervous the night of Michael's Bechoris, because you see that Moshe has been 9 for 9 at this point in time, and he's getting it pretty right. Yet Pharaoh does not let the Jews go. You can imagine what the Bechorim were feeling. So the commentary that we have on this is, as we say actually in Davening, in the Bracha right after Kriyat Shema, is Lemakei Mitzrayim Bevchoreihem, that Egypt was smote with its firstborns. That doesn't mean to say that the firstborns were smote, but the firstborns were actually doing the fighting. That means to say that there was civil war on that night, where there was internal factions killing each other because of confusion and the impending fear. The firstborns were killing the army was slaughtering back the firstborns. It was civil unrest internally, and this is what Hashem says is going to happen in the future. I'm going to place Egypt against Egypt, Mitzrayim be Mitzrayim. V'nilchamu ish ba'achiv v'ish ba'ra'eil. There'll be discord and adversity amongst the diversity. We don't know when in history this is going to happen, but this happens, unfortunately, in many places. You want to look in one place in history, the downfall of the Moors in Spain. It's interesting, when you witness their downfall, you'll see that there's so much civil unrest, they almost undo themselves before the Catholics actually take over, before Isabella and Ferdinand take over them. There's so much discord that they split themselves up in factions, fighting among themselves to the point that they have nothing left between all of them. And that's really what Hashem is saying is going to happen when Egypt falls here. This is happening in the late 1400s in Spain. What does it mean that the sea will change its course? Meaning, I understand the river is Egypt's basic source, but the sea and the river, the sea does not feed the river. So what is the sea changing its course? The Mitzvot David points out that this is an indication that they won't even be able to do ship trade. They won't even be able to go out onto the sea and to find trade there. Whereas the Malbim says no. It was the Egyptians have a river god and a sea god, and they believe that the river god and the sea god are always at odds with one another. And so, therefore, when Egypt is succeeding, when the river is irrigating and supplying the land, the sea god must be against them. So they would be very cautious about going out into the sea. So Hashem says, "Well, it's not a war; they're both going to be smashed. I'm going to destroy both the sea and the river to you. You're not going to be able to use any of them." And finally, the Malbim suggests, maybe on a more basic chart level, that what's happening over here is that the sea over here doesn't refer to the ocean or the Mediterranean Sea. It refers to the reservoirs and the canals used to irrigate the farms, which means to say that when this is happening, everything will fall apart. The whole irrigation system will fall. The river will dry up, and all those reservoirs which had been used for it will be drying up. You can imagine the crisis in today's day and age, when we read the newspapers and read about Cape Town and this day zero when there's not going to be any water, and we get a sense of what kind of calamity that is. That's what's happening over here. The next section of this parak is marked by four sections which begin with the word Bayom Hahu, on that day. Meaning, as Egypt is falling into this terrible state, four things are going to happen, and here they are. Number one is Egypt will become terrified of Hashem, and they'll have this terrible fear of Yehuda, of the Jews of the southern kingdom, because they see that Sennacherib, who conquers them, is not able to conquer Yehuda, and therefore they realize that who's the top of this totem pole is Yehuda, and ultimately the God of Israel, and they'll become a realization. That's the first thing that'll happen. The second thing that'll happen by Yom Ahu is going to be that there's going to be five cities in Egypt which will speak the Lashon of Canaan, meaning speaking, as most of the Farshim understand, the language of Hebrew, Lashon HaKodesh, and they're going to be swearing in the house by the life of Hashem, and they're going to the point of self-destruction, they'll unite. That means to say that they're going to be serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu even though they're in Egypt. Which cities are these? It's a very interesting discussion. Rashi brings that, I'm quoting Chazal, Menachos, that it might be at the times of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, when he conquers the area of Egypt and he sends back prisoners to Egypt. These prisoners may serve Hashem in fear and may set up their own strongholds in Egypt. The Gemara also suggests, Menachos Kuftes Amubez, that this could be referring to a later period of time during the second Beis HaMikdash, where at the times of Shimon HaTzadik there was an area set up in Mitzrayim called Beis Chonio, this sort of complex reality where there was service of God, or somewhat service of God. Very, very fascinating episode which happens, and this is referring to the future. Why Yeshayahu is talking about this, not clear, because that wasn't necessarily a time of great success. And the Malbim points out that it might just be in the future. It might be referring to the Yemos HaMashiach, when Egypt and this whole area comes under Israel control. It is interesting to me, noticing just historically between the years 1973 and 82, when there was, after the Yom Kippur War, and at this point in time when the Yishuvim were set up in the Sinai Peninsula, ultimately there were actually 14 Yishuvim at its height, which were all retracted at the time of the peace negotiations. And they were dismantled, the biggest one, of course, being Yamit. But it's interesting to think about some sort of messianic potential, which is what a lot of the people actually believed at the time. Barbara now points out that it is not just five cities. And what it really means is that in this sort of messianic apocalyptic vision, we're talking about all sets of five cities will unite, like a hand unites the fingers, and all of Egypt will be uniting in the name of God. God willing, we should see that. The last two things that we're told about are going to happen on that day is that there's going to be an altar in Egypt. There's going to be a Mizbeach in Mitzrayim, and they're going to serve Hashem in Mitzrayim, and they're going to pray to Hashem, and Hashem will make sure to be known to Mitzrayim, because anybody who disagrees, Hashem will plague them, plaguing them and healing them, and they will return to Hashem. Really, really a powerful idea. And finally, the parak closes with a very, very powerful description, and that is that at this point in time, when Assyria comes and Egypt is conquered by Assyria, there will be this, we'll call it tripartite service of God, where we'll be Yisrael l'shlishia l'mitzrayim l'ashur bracha b'kerav ha'aretz. Between Egypt, Israel, and Assyria, there'll be bracha to Hashem. Asher beruchu Hashem tzvaka v'zneimor, they'll bless Hashem saying, Baruch ami Mitzrayim ma'ase yedei Ashur v'nachal asir Yisrael, which means that Egypt will be blessing Hashem because they chose to see Hashem through their own downfall and what witnessing Israel's upswing. Assyria will be expressing God for being his stick, for being God's weapon of choice, and Israel for being Hashem's inheritance. Each of those three entities will be thanking Hashem for their role and seeing Hashem in history. It's interesting to think, if we have a choice, what would we choose? Do you want to be Hashem's instrument of destruction in the world? That's how you see Hashem. Do you want to be the one hit by Hashem, having to see Hashem through that, or do you want to see Hashem through being his leader in the world? That's the question which sort of Tanakh leaves open for us. Last thing just to think on a Kabbalistic note is this notion of what's called Nogof v'Rafah, of Egypt being plagued and healing. Usually it is understood in Pshat to mean that Egypt is both being plagued but also healed. So there's a sort of oscillation in Egypt. But as the Zohar points out, quoted by the Talal Eichaim, Rav Chaim Cohen in his Sefer, referring to the Makos, he says an interesting thing. And that is that this is actually a dual process which happens with two audiences. The one is Egypt and the other is Israel, which means at the same moment that Egypt is learning its lessons and getting its negifa, it's getting its makos, whether in the future or in the past, we at the same time were learning the lesson of that, and we were afar. We were healing from the experience of having been in Mitzrayim and in their culture. So that means to say, the example he gives is a Gemara in Sanhedrin, which says that the bat and the chicken are speaking to each other, and the chicken says, oh boy, I'm so looking forward to the morning. And the bat says, I'm also looking forward to the morning. And the chicken says, no, you don't get it. In the morning, I'm going to start operating. And at that point in time, for that very moment, break of dawn will be the reason that you stop operating. Meaning to say, the same makor, which is going to be putting Egypt in its place, is going to be the same actual healing that's coming to Israel. Which means to say, there's a dual process and dual audiences of the same expression. Hopefully both audiences are listening. Because it's all very nice to watch the fireworks from the side, but if we ain't getting the lesson, then one of the audiences we're missing, it's part of it. We should witness, God willing, our salvation. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.